the color and the saturation and just the way Charles has his shit set up, he looks like he's doing an interview for like an A&E
So after 169 episodes of capturing audio for post-production, the boys have finally sent me sound files that cannot be seamlessly wrestled into submission. Now, this is not their fault. Technical difficulties are a motherfucker. Oh, my name's Mike, by the way. I'm post-production editor for Breaking the Panel, and a large section of the show is sadly gone this week. If you were watching video, you got it all, but for the podcast, Phil and Charles have sent a bit of backup audio, over an hour's worth, and I'm going to piece things together as best I can. So y'all sit back and listen. I'm about to edit the fuck out of this show. Enjoy.
So there was technical difficulties there. I lost clots mid-sentence. And I'm curious because I did watch Akira when I was younger. I don't remember much about it other than my sheltered, churchy brain was not ready for it. And there's weird things at the end. I don't remember details, but what happened? Well, yeah, not details, of course, but you were starting to say, and at the end of the movie, they go do something like full tilt crazy. I don't know. What were you saying about?
Well, the film starts in like your kind of now somewhat typical cyberpunk dystopia. And by the end of it, it's essentially a statement on nuclear weapons, but it's done in a way with like body horror and like superpowers, essentially. Like it takes a crazy, crazy turn, and it guides you there. Like throughout the film, you're like, all right, well, where are we going? And then all of a sudden at the end, you're just like, what the fuck? But it's a trip, man. And I'll tell you, like, that's why Akira is often quoted as why Taika would say something like, it changes your life. It's totally understandable to hear a filmmaker say that, because it is completely non-conventional. You know, like, where its endpoint is so far out there. And that was part of the appeal, right? Of like, when anime was just starting to break out over here in the States, when we were just starting to get some of it, it was the cream of the crop like this. It was, Akira, Ghost in the Shell, Vampire Hunter D.
Ninja Scroll.
They wanted to make sure.
Ninja Scroll. Yeah. Ninja Scroll is another one that's a hell of a mindfuck at times, you know what I mean? Ghost in the Shell's a mindfuck, because Ghost in the Shell is a very, very existential trip, you know, because it asks the questions of what is humanity, you know, and Akira does it as well in its own way. So basically what I'm saying is whatever Taika does here is going to be really, really interesting to see. I do not think that this is going to – I think this is probably going to have the same kind of box office performance that Ghost in the Shell had, as in lukewarm. It's probably going to be similar to Blade Runner 2049, you know, where it's going to – presumably, if they get the right people in the right places, they're going to get some amazing technical awards, and they're going to get completely snubbed on actual sales and overall people caring about it.
Can you imagine if he goes all out and gives us Japanese with subtitles?
That'd be pretty awesome, actually.
How tits would that be?
I actually am a huge fan of subtitles.
Yeah, so
I'm gonna disagree with you.
Well,
I feel like
a fan of subtitles.
No, I feel like this movie is if it is done correctly, which anime, movie, live action, those words don't go together really right. That well, right? It's kind of like Frank was saying from Toy Power. Video game movies. They suck.
I said that, you dumb dick.
I made this. No,
it was most certainly
Frank. God.
Way to be a Charles about it, Phil.
But this is the opportunity to have your moment, to have your changing point. And I have enough faith in Taika to produce something that's going to change the landscape of live action anime films.
I just don't think that's likely to happen. I think he's going to make a great film.
Of course. Well, me as well. But I think that he's got enough momentum behind him now that people are going to go to see it because it's a Taika film. And I think it's going to make enough money.
I don't agree
with
that.
You don't think so?
No. Especially because Akira is not Thor Ragnarok, dude. Mm-hmm. Like, there is no way to turn Akira into a buddy cop. flick. You know what I mean? Or
his, well, that's the thing. I don't know what you mean, because I don't have the knowledge of the story. Well,
it's like 2049.
Yeah.
That's why I'm comparing it to that. 2049 is Blade Runner 2049 is both Blade Runner films ask the questions that get to the core of what makes us human. You know, in our experiential lives, what sets us apart from animal? What sets us apart from inanimate object? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if you can create life in AI, is it human? You know, if it has free will and its own thoughts and its own emotions, you know what I mean? Akira isn't quite in that same vein, but it is asking questions like, at least the original film, when is enough enough? Like the pursuit of power, in this case in particular, the pursuit of like superpowers, the pursuit of like nuclear power, because it gets, the end of the film, everything gets way out of hand, and you know, the losing control. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it's so it's I don't see this being like, because there's no way to market it like that. There's no way to be like, hey, do you like What We Do in the Shadows? Do you like Thor Ragnarok? Did you have a good laugh there? Come watch this super serious hard sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
By the way, it's a manga adaptation.
As far as the movie, yeah. And they'll be wonderful, but then you're selling it more as an action movie.
And you're gonna bamboozle the first weekend worth of people, and then everyone's gonna be like, that movie sucked. You know what I mean? Which I'm sure is pretty much what happened with 2049, is we probably roped a few people, right? We probably grabbed a few people. Oh, Harrison Ford, Ryan Gosling. Oh, yeah, that's got to be good, right? And then, you know, the first weekend of people go and they're like, you know, you got your basic white women who are like, Ryan Gosling is so cute. What the fuck was that? Like, why did I just watch Dave Bautista for 20 minutes, dude? Nothing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, that's the thing, is it's like, it's out there, you know, and it's not even as easy of a sell as Ghost in the Shell was. Ghost in the Shell is like, here's the thing. Everybody bitched about the whitewashing, but like, they cast Scarlett Johansson because they're like, we need to sell tickets, mm-hmm. because nobody gives a fuck about this if we don't put a name in this.
Yeah.
So they put a name in it. They put her in that cat suit because everybody's, oh, Scarlett Johansson. Yeah. And you know what I mean? Like, that's the thing, is like, they tried to sell an action movie with Scarlett Johansson that was based on an anime. And it failed in every respect in that regard. If Taika's not going to fall into that trap, thankfully, he's going to be in an even worse position, because now he's going to try to sell a movie that is super dark, super serious, gritty, hard sci-fi, based on a manga / anime. And on top of all of that, he's not going to cast look at that, because it's nothing like his other work.
You're at that point, you're really relying on Leonardo DiCaprio producing, Taika directing,
and writing, directing,
and those are the names that you now have.
And Chris, honestly, what you said about the advertising, you're relying on trailers, you're relying on commercials, you're relying on putting your visual splendor in front of people and being like, you got to see this. But we've seen other films do that. Valerian did that, and Valerian didn't do well at all.
Valerian was bad. It just did not carry the spirit.
Well, yeah.
But, you know, and on really what I kind of, because I was thinking about it the other night, what I almost want to see is like the color and the visuals of Valerian. I mean, that's, or even 2049, right? But delivered like Sin City, mm-hmm. especially since you're drawing from the manga. Like, it doesn't need to be I don't need the black and white, but I think that Robert Rodriguez did such a good job of saying this is a live action comic book. And
I was literally just saying that on Philip's stream today, mm-hmm. or yesterday.
I heard Chris say it.
I think it was Frank from Toy Power. Well, if I got to see this, I have to go out and watch it.
I've got high hopes for it, but I mean, it's...
Well,
it's,
I just meant the original.
Oh, yeah. Because,
do yourself a favor. Yeah.
And it is streaming, everyone. If you have Hulu, it is streaming right now. So Hulu always seems to be the place to go if you want to get anime, if it's not Crunchyroll, from what I've seen.
Yeah.
Because like, that's where I was watching Cowboy Bebop was on Hulu. So,
well, yeah. So now... Here's the thing, too. Like, for anybody who hasn't seen Akira and you're like, oh, fuck it, I don't like anime, there was a paradigm shift right around the time that Cartoon Network used to show, what the hell was it called? when stuff started to blow up over here and Cartoon Network was like, oh, we can make, you know, there's an audience in the States for, yeah, he just said that, Charles.
I paused, so I didn't catch it.
Oh, yeah. Well, turn off Pornhub.
I don't know what's going on. We're going to swap over to another computer here in a second, but finish your thought.
Anyways, right as that stuff was starting to kick off, there was a major shift in the Japanese market, and the kind of stuff that people cut their teeth on, like what we're talking about, Akira, Ghost in the Shell, Vampire Hunter D, Ninja Scroll, the super gritty, really clever, interesting, visually stunning anime suddenly fell completely out of favor for the most part. And you started getting stuff that was aimed at kids or teenagers. Some of it is gritty, some of it is edgy, but it started getting very, very formulaic, and it all started to focus on being shows rather than moved. And that is like when, because that's another thing. The other issue they're going to have in catching an audience is you're snapshotting people in our age cohort. You know what I mean? People who are in their 30s who remember anime when it was amazing. When if something showed up on Blockbuster's shelf from Japan, you were like, give it to me because it's going to be good. And you would get it home and you put it in and you'd be like, oh my God, this is amazing. They're doing the most insane stuff. It's not like that anymore. Everything's very like all over the place nowadays. There's still good anime out there, but it's like there's so much garbage, there's so much trash. So don't think it's that stuff. It's not. There's a reason why people harp on Akira and Ghost in the Shell and the other ones I listed. They are a step above.
And even those, I mean, those four in particular, because Nausicaa of the Valley of the Winds is what, I think that's probably the first anime that I ever remember seeing. And that was when I was a kid, like 4 or 5, maybe, yeah, 4 or 5, because it was, but it was on HBO. I caught it and watched it because it was a cartoon. But Miyazaki is, Miyazaki and then there's anime, you know what I mean? And those four, you know, Vampire Hunter D, Ninja Scroll, Akira, and Ghost in the Shell, those are mainstream anime that are about as close as you can get to where Miyazaki is as a filmmaker without being a Miyazaki film. And I think that's why those transcend so much when you think about genre-defining films. And there's just, so I think when we define it like that, then we're looking at, you know, the exceptions to the rule. And that's why you see all this stuff that comes out later. And yeah, like you said, I mean, they're focused more towards shows, and those shows became more focused towards the marketing of trading card games. Pokemon. Come on, Charles.
Yeah.
Don't act like you're immune.
Well, there was a point where the Japanese market realized where most of the dollars were, which was with kids and teenagers. And that's, yeah.
Yep.
That's the thing.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, absolutely. I couldn't recommend that movie anymore to people that ask me. And I'm by no means an anime aficionado, but Akira, if you have the opportunity to watch it, take it.
There's another one I watched about that time was either Evangelion or Neo Evangelion.
Yeah, Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Neon Genesis Evangelion. Yeah, that was out there, but I love
that. That is considered to be one of the greatest anime series of all time. And that is considered to be like the mainstream grandpappy of all mecha anime, other than Gundam. I mean, Gundam predates it, but sure. EVA was the first one that was like, we can tell complex, deep stories and do mecha and have it be insane and amazing.
Yeah. And see, and I always gave Macross a lot of credit for that too before Neon came out, but it was lesser known than
Gundam. That was the thing. All right. Macross is the true grandpappy.
Sure. What are our opinions, collective opinions of Screen Rant?
50-50.
I probably can't see the headline well.
Yeah, breaking news.
So the headline says, Tom King co-writing Marvel's New Gods movie with Ava DuVernay.
Who's Tom King?
Tom King's writer for Batman. But more importantly, New Gods is not a Marvel property.
I didn't think so, but I'm a filthy casual, so.
So somebody at Screen Rant fucked up again. Seems like I always see a lot of fucking.
So we want to talk about Snorlax, or we want to? Oh, Chris, you gotta go, man.
Yep.
Yeah, we'll just we'll kill the Pokemon thing for now. We can talk about sleep later. It's not a big deal. Yeah. The Pokemon home thing was way more important.
Yeah, well, we got part of that, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, who knew that that, you know, Brother Eye or Big Brother was going to take the form of a Pokeball. Just come on now. So, All right, guys. I will catch you later. Oh, you can find me on the Twitters in All Things Wisdom and on the Facebook and in the Panel Breaker page, and if you care. So you got that for later.
Nobody does.
All right. Talk to you guys later.
Right. Later. Anyway.
Breathe, Charlie. Breathe. I know you're angry. I can hear it. I can see it. But you got to breathe.
I'm not angry, more like it's been a while since I've been through this kind of stuff before, but it's more like I just want to go sleep like Snorlax. It's like, all right. Well, we're going to take a quick break.
We're on break, Charles.
Well, he just did his rap out thing. I didn't know if Mike heard that out. So here's you an official. We're on break, Mike. We're on break, fuckers. We'll be back in a minute.
Patreon.com/breakingthepanel is where you go to support the show. Now, we know that you all are crazy enough to listen to our little shit show here, but are you crazy enough to support? A lot of you actually are. We've got a couple new patrons over the last couple weeks, and I deeply appreciate it all the way down in my deep, grinchy heart. One of the perks you get with the Patreon is the behind-the-scenes uncut editions of the weekly episode. We record for about 20 to 30 minutes before the show starts. We talk in the mid-show break and then the post-show, and a lot of that, you know, just gets cut out because it doesn't fit the show. Maybe at that point we talk about things that we're going to drop mid-show. Things get weird. Things get heated sometimes. The only place to get that is over at patreon.com/breakingthepanel. So support if you can. Any amount is perfect with us. And let's get to the second half of the show. See ya!
All right.
Oh my god, Charles, no.
I'm so fucking defeated! All right.
So we're back, and now Phil's recording the audio, so at least you guys will have something to listen to at the end of the shit. Some news broke today, right? We've been talking about Game of Thrones and different things, and Kit Harington, has his publicist has confirmed that he's in rehab dealing with alcohol, they didn't call it abuse, but basically alcohol stuff and personal issues. And thoughts, you kind of felt this was an interesting thing to bring to the table.
Well,
this class. I got this one too. I might not have internet, but I got this one.
It was me.
No, you mentioned it. We shut it down. Class mentioned it. We greenlit it. Yeah. How that went in the pre-show. I fucking remember.
Oh shit!
I literally just got little brothered. This is my idea. It's shit. This is my idea. You're a genius. Damn.
This is mine.
That way, yes.
I made this. Anyways, So news came out that Kit Harington is in rehab here stateside. He's in Connecticut, I believe. And all reports say that he is in, as one article I saw described it, the Rolls Royce of rehabs.
Yeah, it's $120,000 a month.
Yep. Jeez. But he's in for reportedly for alcohol as well as just basically a whole bunch of stress and everything else.
Stress.
Yep. So what I wanted to talk about, not so much about Kit specifically, but basically the whole thing around a show. In this case, what we're seeing is actually something that's happened before, which is, so Game of Thrones, 10 years ago, they cast a bunch of no names, a bunch of people coming out of acting school, a bunch of people who were just cutting their teeth. You know what I mean? They cast a bunch of people who've been doing like small bit roles for a long time, but didn't, you know, aren't necessarily established household names. And the show pretty much made every single person a household name, like everybody, every single one of them.
I remember, that, not to interrupt the flow, but I do remember at the end of the first or maybe second year, Kit Harington was at a hockey game just as an average joke, is thinking, you know, no, he's not that big of a star. And the it was broadcast, and who, whatever channel was broadcasting it, caught he was in the audience, and literally the caption read, "Jon Snow, he knows nothing."
Yeah.
You know, and just because he's at the hockey game, I was like, no, that's the effect that this show had. And yeah, obviously he had to change how he did things after that. Blew up on the internet, but yeah.
So, you know, of course, with the popularity of the show comes a lot of scrutiny. In particular, my understanding is things kind of kicked off. Well, for him, he talked about this in an interview. I was reading about this today. I believe it's the end of season 5. And we've already talked about spoilers for Game of Thrones. So if you don't listen to, if you have not watched Game of Thrones and you intend to watch Game of Thrones, I'm sorry. I'm about to say some spoilers. So come back in like 2 minutes. But end of season 5, his character dies. Obviously not permanently, because he was still here three seasons later. Yeah. Yeah. But apparently, once that story arc happened and they did the season cliffhanger with him, that exploded the focus on him. Like, he was an important part of the show up to that point, but he was not essentially one of the main characters, really. Now he is a main character on the show at that point, and the narrative focuses on him above pretty much just about everybody else. And that all that scrutiny and everything, it started to stress him out. This is somebody who he really cared about. He cares about Jon Snow as a character. You know what I mean? He cared about the work he was doing. My understanding is he was basically fresh out of acting school when they cast him.
So this was 22.
He was, yeah, early on. So he's grown up on this show, essentially. And, I mean, a whole bunch of them have. Maisie Williams has grown up on this show. Yeah. Sophie Turner, you know, Kit Harington has, a number of the others. Another big factor with Kit is a bunch of the other actors on the show came from already affluent backgrounds, so they might have had, like, some experience with dealing with fame and attention and all that kind of stuff. He did not. He came from, you know, a modest background, is my understanding.
Was he a bastard? Not claimed by...
No, but like what I'm saying is he came from a working class family, is my
understanding. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so the scrutiny and everything was really out of left field for him, and it was a lot. And like one person was talking about, I don't know what they were referencing, but it's like, yeah, it's got to be pretty wild to like see a drone shooting you as you're getting out of the shower. You know what I mean? Like trying to get footage of you getting climbing out of the shower. And it, like, that's the level of scrutiny we're talking about. We're talking about paparazzi everywhere. We're talking about, like you said, not being able to go to a sporting event without getting called out.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. And we saw the same thing happen with the kids on Harry Potter, for example.
Yeah.
You know? Yep. We watched those kids grow up on that, those films.
Hermione had or the actress who plays.
So Hermione, she grew up pretty quick right before our eyes, is what he was trying to say, I guess, because I don't know.
that was FBI open up right there.
Yeah, the FBI.
So Hermione!
Let me talk about Hermione. But continue, Paul.
Well, you know, Emma Watson, when Harry Potter was finished, Emma Watson tried to go to college here in the States.
Yeah.
She tried to go to Brown University, and she ended up dropping out. And one of the reasons she dropped out largely was because nobody, like when she raised her hand in class, and she was quoted in an interview, from what I understand, she'd raise her hand in class and you know, interact with a professor, answer a question or whatever, and then after that interaction was over, somebody in the class would go 10 points for Gryffindor, you know? And it's like,
yeah,
I'm sure that was funny the literal first time it ever happened. And then after a while, it's just like, well, you're not treating her like a human being, and she's here trying to learn just like you are, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, no, it's crazy. And Maisie Williams has talked about how like reading the feedback on prior seasons had really stressed her out and gotten her head. Sophie Turner, I'm sure the same thing, you know, has been under a lot of scrutiny. It takes over your life in a way, right? You know?
Well, yeah, but it certainly does. And nobody likes to read negative feedback, but we are creatures who need validation every once in a while.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even with my show, you know, we have something like a 200 and, let's say 250 some iTunes reviews, but the only ones that really stick with you over the nights is the 2 1-star reviews.
Yeah.
Or anything. Nobody likes to be told that they're doing their job wrong or they're not doing a good job, you know, either at the workplace or at home or anywhere.
And the thing is, like, so Game of Thrones is a perfect example of what was wrong with the last 2 seasons is not something that the actors did wrong. It's not something that the crew did wrong. You know, for all intents and purposes, the show was continued to be produced at the same level that it had been, if not better.
Yeah.
However, the writing, you know, the people in charge, the directors and the creative, you know, the overall creative control, they made story decisions and writing decisions that took the legs out from underneath these people who had spent 10 years working on a show. Both people, you know, cast and crew. And that's got to be, you know, I talked about in the pre-show, HBO released a documentary about the, you know, the filming and everything, the production of the last season. And one of the things that they had shown was like Kit Harington reacting to seeing what his character does. And Conleth, who plays Varys, reacting to what happens to his character. As a matter of fact, at one point, Conleth throws a script in disgust, seemingly. Excuse me. And so, you know, you can't, and like people are watching this like, oh, this is going to be good. And they're looking at the face of everybody on camera, like at the table reads, right? And like they're watching them for their reaction to stuff, you know what I mean? And how they're, and there are a lot of people who seem kind of disgruntled, you know?
How was Dinklage and the gentleman who played Jaime Lannister?
I haven't watched it myself.
Okay, yet, okay.
So
okay.
I've only seen what people were talking about on Reddit. And somebody else, a couple other people pointed out, like, some of this stuff is taken out of context, right? You know, like, some of it is like, you're building a narrative around a clip that was included in a documentary, you know? You don't know the true story, but it's like, you have to feel like in some case, like, Varys is the perfect example. You put in 9 seasons of just stellar fucking performance, right? You are a rock. You're somebody who shows up every season, and every scene you're in is just so fucking good. I couldn't imagine somebody else playing that role and nailing it like Conleth did, right?
Yeah.
And I apologize, I can't remember Conleth's last name, but anyways, point is, this guy embodied this character for 10 years, and in the final season, to just get written into the ground, and also to have everything that's incredible about your character just completely ignored, so that you can get tied up like a little bow and the storyline can move on without you. That's got to be devastating in a way, right?
Yeah, completely.
You know?
I destroy someone's self-worth. Yeah. I mean, at that point, right? I just, yeah. I always remember that, and I forget the actor's name, but the gentleman who played Jaime Lannister was always like very excited about the future of his character. And then when he would read his scripts, it's like an opposite direction of where he thought he was going. Mm-hmm. So he never really knew where his character was being written to. And he would fight the writers about, well, no, we did this and this and this. A plus B equals C, but we're at yeah. M. Why are we at M? It sucks.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing. It takes its toll. It's crazy to see that somebody's in rehab because of this. And, you know, some people have pointed out too, like, we're sure the drinking isn't entirely because of the show. You know, part of it might have been because they would do production in parts of rural Ireland, for example. Getting stuck on set for a couple weeks at a time, I mean, what are you going to do? You're done shooting for the day. You're in rural Ireland. You know, you're going to go hang out. You know,
I've been to rural Ireland before.
Yeah.
There's like two shops.
Yeah. they both sell alcohol, right?
And they both just sell alcohol.
Yeah.
I mean, it's beautiful as fuck, eh? But yeah, there's nothing to do out there except fish, push some sheep around, and drink.
Mm-hmm. And so that's the whole thing is, you know, it's a shame. I personally, you know, I wish... Kit. Well, the other thing is too. Sorry, I'm all over the place. We've had a really disjointed show today because of all the technical issues we've been having with Charles. And Charles is not coming back, by the way. So, congratulations, everyone. We won. The other thing that some people pointed out is the press junket is probably what like really, really pushed everybody to their limit. The press junket for this last season of Game of Thrones was insane. It was grueling. Kit Harington, for example, was the week he was on SNL, he did three late show appearances, like three different evening talk show appearances. And then pretty much the moment SNL was done, he hopped on a plane to go do Graham Norton.
Oh.
Which is crazy. So he is at SNL for the whole week. And, you know, we now know from the documentary that they released a few years ago that that can be kind of a grueling process. Cause if somebody's willing to be involved, the guest is willing to be involved, they get them in, they get them in the writing process. They really try to build skits around them. And we saw that he committed fully to all the skits he was in. I don't know if you watched that episode, but
no, I did not.
I don't think all the skits were a winner, but the point is he committed. Like he didn't, some actors, some famous people show up and do SNL and they are a fish out of water. He was not that. He was not necessarily a natural born comedic actor, but he played the straight man in it whenever he needed to. He played a goofball a couple times too. It was great. He did a really great job. But then he hops on a red eye to pop over and go do Graham Norton as well. So, like, that's crazy. You know, that's an insane pace. Doing three talk show appearances in the week while you're doing SNL, doing SNL on Saturday night, getting out there to go tape, which was presumably on Monday for Graham Norton. And then apparently that he went into, like, rehab immediately after all of that. Like, as soon as he was done with his press obligations, he went into rehab, apparently. So...
Yeah, I mean, he went in for stress, but also exhaustion as well.
Yeah.
Which is not surprising. I didn't know about that whole SNL Graham Norton red eye rigmarole.
Yeah, I mean, I could be wrong, but I picked up some of this information from a Reddit thread. But, you know, some people were putting the appearances and everything together and being like, yeah, dude, this is crazy. That's a lot to ask of somebody. And... Yeah, and I'm sure they all went through it. You know what I mean? I'm sure to varying degrees, they all were emotionally invested. Apparently, Emilia Clarke's not happy.
You know? With what?
Well, that's Daenerys. That's the outcome of her character
arc. Okay, well, I didn't know if she was not happy with the outcome of her character arc or if she was not happy with the fans for not liking them, because we have had some of the cast members come out and be like a little bit insulting the fans and saying, how dare you?
Maisie Williams and Sophie Turner have both have done that in the past, I believe.
Yeah. And the gentleman who played Grey Worm did it earlier in the season as well.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy shit. Yeah. Sophie Turner called the remake petition disrespectful.
Disrespectful, yep.
I mean, I don't know.
That's a whole other bucket of worms.
Yeah. Well, obviously asking for a remake is just insanity, right?
Well, like, no, but it's really, it's the point. It's everyone knows that if you're going to sign this petition, there's no way in hell they're ever going to do it. But it was a flag in the earth to prove a point that, hey, look, there's millions of us that are unhappy about this. Mm-hmm. Is it ridiculous? Yes. Is it childlike? Yes. I'm not arguing that. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, we live in a petition society, so. And petitions don't work for anything, ever. What are you doing?
What else should we talk about now that Charles isn't here? We have no rules. We can do whatever the hell we want.
Can I talk about Mario Maker real quick?
Oh, you absolutely can. Please do.
Fuck Mario Maker. Oh, fucking Mario Maker comes out at the end of June. It's a big game. It's Infinity Mario coming out. You know, I believe with the Wii U, there's been something like 7 million different levels have been made since the launch of it. And they introduced a race option, you know, four people racing to the end of these well-made levels by the community and whatnot. And everyone's like, great. Yeah, I love playing Mario with my friends. This is going to be a lot of fun. And Nintendo's like, well, you don't get to really play with your friends because who knows how online play with friends work? We don't. We don't know how to do that. So we're just going to ship without it. And everyone's like, oh, okay, well, you know, that's fine. You'll probably patch it in later on. Well, says Nintendo. yeah, it's just they can't get their feet under them when it comes to this online service. It's fucking ridiculous, right?
Yep.
It's insane. It drives me insane. You are now docking buddies with Microsoft. You know, you two are just going at each other because you're such best friends now. Fucking pick up what they do with their online service. If there's one thing Microsoft is good at, it's getting in there with your friends and playing online. And they always have been since the 360 days. 360! That's like Microsoft figured this out 12 years ago.
Yeah, like, come on.
Nintendo, what are you doing, cock? You fucking cock.
So it's so funny that you're harping on this, because I literally just today watched Wood from Beat 'Em Ups do his video on this topic. And he was like, he did the delivery almost like you just did, where he's like, yeah, so I'm so excited to be able to play Mario Maker with my friends. And like, what? Wait, no? Why? What? No. Why? No. No?
It's so insane. It's absolutely insane. And here's the thing, like, if you're a Nintendo Switch content creator, you can't play with your community, right?
Mm-hmm.
That sucks. That's insane.
Yep.
And they listen to the community managers, the pillars of Mario Maker community. They listen to them, because anything that they wanted in Mario Maker showed up in Mario Maker 2.
Mm-hmm.
Except for a correct online play. And I don't believe it's going to ever be patched in. Now, we don't know that for a fact, but I don't believe it.
You know, and one of the things that Wood said, too, is like, he said that apparently one of the things that they discussed was they didn't want you to be able to queue with friends because it could screw with leaderboards. And they're like, he's like, well, first of all, how many people actually care about the leaderboards. Some.
Nobody. Because Nintendo's online is so bad that it just gets hacked instantly.
Yeah.
And you just, somebody will put up whatever they want to the top to get to the top of that.
But then the other thing he said was, so just make, you know, the custom lobbies with your friends, make them not count for that. And nobody would care. Like, yeah, unranked. Yeah, exactly. Like,
just do what every other game in the world has done. Play
Mario with my friends. Then the other thing, he's like, all right, fine. That sucks, but like, so, you know, well, at least I'll be able to talk to the people that I'm playing with through voice. Oh, no. We don't have VoIP either. Nintendo, what the fuck do you actually have? Like, I gotta say, Phil, you know, while we're on this topic, I love my Switch. And I came around on the Switch because I've been down on Nintendo for a long time. And I was like, you know what? The Switch is a great console. But since having my Switch, there are a number of things that Nintendo has done and is doing and has failed to do that really gets my goat. And a lot of it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. They have a smash hit on their hands. A smash hit that they apparently were ill-prepared for. This console is gangbusters right now. It is still doing well. It's outselling the PS4 in Japan, is based on a couple of reports I saw. It's which true. Is insane. Because, you know, PS4, like Sony is the home of PlayStation, just like it is the home of Nintendo. For a latecomer to come out 4 years after the fact and surpass overall sales for a console is insane. But yet they can't get this online functionality right. Their approach to some of their first party titles is just absolutely mind-boggling. You know, some of the monetization schemes, some of the you know, just the release schedules and stuff like that. Another thing is like the eShop. You know, you've talked about this a bunch of times. Why is the eShop for the Wii U like 10 times better than the Switch eShop?
I don't have the answer for that. No, I don't think anybody does. We don't know why that.
So I kind of think it's time for all of us to stop collectively sucking Nintendo's dick here and to say, hey, what the hell is going on, guys? Like, what are you doing? Because there has been a... What is the most distinct, clear message from Nintendo over the last year to 2 years since the Switch really blew up? If you care about online play, just fuck right off.
Yeah.
Because we don't care.
It's insane. I will always reference Mario Party. The fact that you can't play Mario Party online. You can play mini games, but you can't play online Mario Party. And do I expect to see a thing at E3 this year about that? My heart says yes, but my heart also says that this is the year for Fallout 3. Half-Life 3. It's not going to happen. It's not.
Yeah, their E3 Direct is going to be really interesting.
Considering that everyone was like, all right, well, they're definitely going to be talking about Mario Maker, and then Mario Maker had their mini Direct, and everyone's like, all right, well, then they're definitely going to be talking about Pokemon.
Nope.
Pokemon just had a mini Direct. What are we going to be talking about, Nintendo? Are they going to surprise us? No, I don't think we will. But
I got to say, E3 is going to be kind of a letdown this year. I don't think Nintendo's going to be anywhere near as good as it was last year. Sony's not even there. E3 is going to be a fucking dud, man. Like, this is going to be a rough year.
I can't wait. It's going to be so awkward. I'm going to love it.
Yeah. I want some more Jesse Wellens introing Need for Speed. I want stuff like that.
I need more Andrew WK.
Yes.
Flying to a dead room. A fucking room of corpses.
Nintendo's choices lately have been absolutely mind-boggling. It is inexplicable what they are thinking. And honestly, if it's a technology issue, or if it's a security issue, just to release a statement, just be like, listen, guys, all right, we're not doing a lot of online features in most of our titles because we're trying to shore up some security issues. That it doesn't expose them any more than they're already exposed to admit that publicly. Just be like, yeah, we're gonna under deliver on online features for a while until we can sort this out. Yeah, but apparently not.
No, and they have huge problems with that, because I know for a long time that like the cheating in Splatoon 2 was so rampant.
Yeah.
Like you can in Splatoon you can change like your word bubble, and a lot of people do like fan art that's all pixelated and it's very beautiful. But for a while everybody changed it to like curb cheating in this game, cheating's ruining the ranked play and all this razzmatazz. So
yeah.
I don't know. But that's the thing, like we can complain about it, but like you said,
stop buying shit.
Nobody's going to stop buying things.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, but that's the other issue. I've stopped buying stuff. I haven't bought a Switch game in like 3 months.
I don't even play it on stream anymore. I haven't played my Switch on stream in a long time. Something new. I haven't.
Right.
Me and Suzanne played Treasure Trackers. That was the last thing I played.
Yeah. Well, the last thing I bought was Banner Saga. I was going to stream it, but I haven't been streaming as much lately.
Yeah.
Which I got to change. I got to get back on the horse for that. But, like, yeah, it's just a lot of the, like, I don't want to buy the first title stuff because it never goes on sale. I don't want to buy stuff through the eShop because virtually every game that I want to play in the eShop, I can buy on Steam for, like, $2.
Yeah, it's the Nintendo tax. Why is it higher for digital? I don't understand it.
The fucking digital titles that are $10 or less on Steam are like $15 to $25 on Switch. Like, you're fucking kidding me. Some of these titles have been out forever. You know what I mean? Like, I know they got to port them. I get it. You got to do a port. But for your, like, indie roguelikes, come on. Come on.
I wonder if that's more Nintendo. Well, I guess
it's Nintendo, I guarantee it's Nintendo it.
Because the publisher probably has to take and put the price in, but then Nintendo takes a percentage, so they have to make the prices higher to get what they want for their game. Yeah.
But we've seen the behavior of publishers. If a title has been out for more than a couple months, they are happy to discount it into the ground, right? Now they just want dollars. They just want eyes and dollars, right? At that point, especially if they've recouped, if they're in the black, you know what I mean? They're like, yeah, just pile it on us. We got to fund the next project. You know what I mean? So, yeah, no, it's crazy because you look at Humble Bundle, you look at Steam sales, and on PC, it's like, and I understand that PC is a much smaller subset of the gaming market than any of the individual consoles, but like it's still like it's so night and day, the behavior and the way it's structured, and it's like it's got to be Nintendo getting in the way, because even on PlayStation and Microsoft a lot of these games are cheaper, especially if they've been out for a while.
You're right.
And it's like I don't think Nintendo wants our money.
You have said that before.
Yeah,
on the show
I still stand by it. I really do. Like, Nintendo has this really stubborn approach where they're like, we want you to buy like 2 games a year at full price. We don't want to sell you 15 to 20 smaller games on the eShop at 50% off. We want to sell you 2 first-party games at full price a year. And if you buy anything else, we don't give a shit. I don't get it. It doesn't make sense to me. But I don't know what the back end of their business looks like. I suspect there's reasons for it. They're probably not very good. It might be negligence. It might be malice. I'm not sure. The other issue I'm having is their controllers all suck. All yeah, of them.
They do.
My Pro Controller, I'm not happy with it anymore. I regret, Philip Keating, I regret you advising me to buy a Pro Controller. I was happier with my wired Power A controller because it was responsive. The Pro Controller is not responsive in every game. In other games, it's oversensitive, right? Like, you can't play Tetris 99 with the Pro Controller.
No, I don't. I switched off that, day three.
Yeah, you're not supposed to. Everybody's like, no, don't. Use the Joy-Cons. The Joy-Cons are awkward for me, and Joy-Cons are so prone to having issues. They get damaged really easily. They erode pretty easily. They drift. It's just like your controllers have fucking sucked for this whole console. All the best controllers on the market, as far as I've heard, are third party.
See, and I try not to buy third party controllers.
Well, I'm the same, but it's like, this is the world we live in.
So what could Nintendo do to help turn this around for you?
For me, they need to behave like everybody else.
Yeah, but they don't. See, the issue with Nintendo is like, they look at themselves as being the only gaming company in the world.
Yeah, that's...
And they ignore any kind of progression that has been made. And I know that's, hey, I'm with you. That's not how you run a business. But it's worked this long.
I'm not saying, well, it hasn't, though. We talked about this on the show a couple months ago. If the Switch had underperformed, they would be out of the console business.
Yeah.
They would be strictly software. And it looked like it would have been more than likely that they probably would have just licensed out all their first-party properties to studios that wanted to make games for them. They would have turned into another company that does that now. There's a couple of them. There's a few companies who've been Sega, yeah. It's like Marvel in the 90s when they sold all their TV and movie rights.
Yeah,
let everybody else make the movies. You know, we just need some cash. They were almost in that point. They were almost at that point. But the Switch saved them. And again, I'm going to shout out Wood from his YouTube channel, Beat 'Em Ups, who's one of my favorite super, super Switch-focused YouTubers. He said, you know, Nintendo always seems to be either 2 years ahead or 2 years behind in whatever aspect of the industry that you're talking about. And the fact that they continuously ignore what their competition is doing is infuriating to me. I'm not saying I want them to adopt all the worst features of their competition. I think you can still be Nintendo. You can still be fiercely independent. You can still protect your first party properties very, very carefully, but adapt a little bit to the changing marketplace. Your sales can be a little better in the eShop. You can offer a lot more for a digital version versus a physical version, because holy shit, it boggles my mind that I can buy, there are games that you can buy the physical copy brand new for next to nothing, and then you still have to pay full bang or close to full bang in the eShop. Change that shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're running a sale, if you're teamed up with a company like Target and they're doing a buy two, get one free sale on your games, which you obviously had to approve because you heavily control how your products are sold, why don't you do the same thing in your eShop?
Yeah, that kind of confused the shit out of me. But not only that, like, there was no promotion for it.
Yeah.
Because I didn't see it inside their news when that happened. And I just stumbled across that sale and then told everybody on the network about it.
Yeah. Well, that might have been Target trying to move merchandise, too.
True.
My local Target, there's never anybody in their electronics department, ever.
Uh-huh.
And I've walked in there and seen, like, hot new games, and they still have, like, four or five on the shelf. Like, on Sunday of the opening weekend, you know what I mean, of a new game. It's like, damn, you should be sold out of, like, the new Pokemon or the new, you know, whatever. Like, when Let's Go Eevee and Pikachu came out, Nope. They hit tons. They're like, yeah, we're good. If suddenly like everybody in town wanted to buy this game, we'd still be good. Granted, I'm sure part of that is they overorder for something that they anticipate to sell a lot of like that, but yeah, it's really weird. Now, that might be Target, that might be Nintendo, I'm not sure.
Well, no, I have the same experience at my Target. Like, I picked up every single one of those Labo kits one a week. And, right. Like, I was the only one buying them every week.
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah, I would go in. Okay, yep, there's three left. All right. Should I? Nah, I'll wait. I'll wait. Yep. Yeah.
Speaking of gaming that is not Nintendo, did you see the Death Stranding trailer?
I have not, but I will when you break it down.
Well, I'm not going to ruin anything for anybody, but if you don't know what I'm talking about Death Stranding, which is a new game from Hideo Kojima, who is famous for the Metal Gear Solid series. This is his new project with Sony from his own production company. And this is the game with, you know, basically lifelike digital representations of the actors playing various characters, such as Mads Mikkelsen. I just had his name and I lost it.
Are you talking about Daryl?
Daryl, yeah.
From The Walking Dead?
Yep.
His name is Norman Reedus. Yeah, yep. There it is.
Okay, Norman Reedus. The French girl from the last Bond film. A bunch of other people. Guillermo del Toro's in it. Plays a character called the Death Man.
All right.
Yeah. This trailer, it's playing on Twitch, I believe, right now on loop. I tuned in. And I watched it mouth agape for the 10-minute presentation of it. This game looks incredible.
Do we know what it's about yet?
We do.
Okay. Well, I am going to have to sit down because we talked about this during our E3 coverage last year about how I was confused on why we were trying to deliver a fetus baby that lights up our lamps.
Yep. That's a little bit illuminated on in this trailer. The basic hook is that Reedus' character has been tasked with connecting settlements in the United States. I don't know why, but it seems to be like a war tore the United States apart. And they're dealing with crazy, like really, really crazy like weather and like natural things going on. And then there's a whole bunch of other stuff going on as well that I'm not going to spoil, but basically he's tasked with connecting communities, it seems. And it almost seems like he's establishing a data network so that they can communicate.
Yeah.
But he's not very happy about doing it because he thinks it's kind of a waste of time. But that's all I really want to spoil for anybody. But anyways, it's a long form trailer. It shows a whole bunch of like a little bit of exposition and stuff, and then it shows some gameplay, and the gameplay seems crazy. It looks like a Kojima game, man. It's going to be steeped in story and nuance and going balls out on his narrative. And it's the only thing that I'm really worried about is I hope it just doesn't fall into the Metal Gear Solid trap of the last few Metal Gear Solids, where they were essentially films that you'd play the Metal Gear Solid minigame and then you'd watch an hour-long film.
Yeah.
A few times and then you were done. So as long as it doesn't fall into that trap, it should be incredible. They kind of showed a little bit about the babies and what's going on with that. I can't wait to finish the show. You're going to watch that trailer with me. Watching you watch it, because I want to see your reaction. If you've ever played any of the Metal Gear Solids and you love them, if you're into narrative video games, go check that shit out. You're probably going to be blown away like I was. I'm not going to buy it. I'm not going to pre-order it or anything. I'm not going to buy it until I've seen what other people think. But if that game comes out and like the first weekend people are just gushing about it, I'm going to pay full bang for that. And if people get early review copies and I get to read some solid reviews ahead of time, I might go out and grab a collector's edition if there's a great one. So,
whoa, damn.
It's, dude, I haven't bought a Kojima game since Metal Gear Solid 4 or 5. I can't remember which one. But I don't care, man. Like, this, what I saw, it was... I was in. I'm like, all right, I want to see where this is going.
November 8th is when that hits shelves. The trailer's out now. It's 8 minutes and 50 seconds long. Like Paul said, it is long form, but now I'm curious. I'm very curious about what
they this definitely is. Show a lot more than they've shown up to this point. So
I like that it's in war-torn America.
Yep.
That's dope. Mm-hmm. Cool. Any new Humble Bundles or anything like that, Paul?
There is a IDW Comics Godzilla!
Oh, for the release of the movies.
Yeah, there's a Godzilla bundle up right now. It's just like IDW's done in the past. It seems, I don't know the quality of these books. There's not as many books as there were in the Transformer one last time. It looks like the dollar tier gets you... 6 books. If you go up to $8, you get another 7 books. And then if you go all the way up to $15, you get an additional 7 books. So it looks like you get right around 21, 22 books for $15 if you want. The art on some of them looks pretty dope. The art on a couple of the others looks a little wonky, but hey, that's kind of how cover art goes.
It's a Godzilla. What do you want?
You know, I'm probably going to grab this just because the IDW books don't really disappoint. And I like supporting comics. I like supporting some of the smaller labels when I can. And having them digitally forever seems dope to me. And at that price, paying less than $1 a comic.
Yeah. I'm just saying, I got to send this to Dennis right now.
Yeah.
Because he was at the bar with me last night, just crying that he couldn't find time to see this fucking movie. Because, I mean, this is his number one property, is the Godzilla series.
Really?
So, yep.
That is a surprising revelation.
He has never missed a Godzilla movie. If he ever got a tattoo, it would be of Godzilla.
Wow.
Yeah, it's his number one IP. It's his baby.
So what's he thought of the other Godzilla movies?
You'll have to ask him, but not too happy about some of the newer ones.
I'm excited to go see the film. Like, absolutely insanely excited. My favorite meme going around right now is early reviews were in, and it was criticized for spending too much focus on the monsters fighting and not enough on the humans in the story.
Which is what the fucking last movie was about. People just bitched him. What the fuck is going on?
Right. And so the meme going around is Professor Hulk from Endgame being like, essentially, this is perfect for me. Or whatever. Like, yeah, this sounds great. I'm in. So I'm super excited to check that out this weekend.
Hi, I made you this really cool monster movie, but we spend way too much time on monster fight. It's the whole point of the fucking movie is to watch the monsters fighting. I got that from the trailer. I don't know what people expected.
I think my favorite thing from the trailer too is fucking the guy from Friday Night Lights there. I can't remember his name. Chandler. Something or whatever, something Chandler. He goes, my God. And then the dude from West Wing goes, Zilla. Just like, I just fucking love that. Because everybody's doing it in their head.
Yeah.
So IDW's got the bundle up on Humble Bundle. That just kicked off. It's got 13, at the time of recording, it's got just under 14 days left. It's 13 days and 16 hours, which means it just launched a little while ago. So you got plenty of time to get in on that if you're listening to this next week. Another thing that Humble has going on that has caught my eye and that I'm deeply considering grabbing, they are publishing a game called Void Bastards, which is a first-person shooter done in kind of like a shell-shaded style that is a roguelike where apparently I think you are playing a sentient backpack and it's your job to like guide a client, which is who's inside of like you're on top of, to the end of a mission and not get them killed in the process. And it's got a really interesting style. It's got the narrator from Stanley Parable.
Oh, he's wonderful.
Yep.
He's and so it's soothing.
It's made by, let's see. I can't see the details here. Let me pull it up in Steam very quickly here because it's worth mentioning. Speaking of Steam, I have a 25% off coupon for this game in Steam because I own System Shock 2 and it's made by some of the people who worked on System Shock 2. And yeah, so check your inventory on Steam. You might have a cheap in on this game. But this game looks dope. I've watched a little bit of streaming. I watched a Scottish guy shout cunt over and over again as he's trying to get through a mission that he didn't have enough equipment for. That was pretty interesting. But yeah, it's called Void Bastards. It is $30 base price. There's a little bit of a discount on Humble Bundle, and obviously if you qualify for a coupon like I did. It's got an interesting visual style. It looks like it could be a lot of fun. And yeah, it's inspired by BioShock and System Shock 2. Void Bastards is a revolutionary new strategy shooter that will test your wits as well as exercise your aim. Can you lead the misfit prisoners of the Void Ark through the derelict spaceships and myriad dangers of the Sargasso Nebula? It's got very positive reviews so far. It just came out today. Or yesterday. So
it looks like an Adult Swim cartoon.
A little bit, yep.
Yeah.
It's got high production value. The developers Blue Manchu and the publishers Humble Bundle. So, yeah.
And Wishlist.
Yep. That's where I'm at. I don't know. I might pull the trigger on it, man. 25% off is pretty spicy.
And how long is that coupon good for?
I don't know when it ends on for me. Now granted, that's because I own System Shock 2, but like,
yeah,
you know, hey, I'll take it. I did pick up also Humble has a sale. This will probably be over by the time the show comes out, but I did pick up Slay the Spire because it was only like $10. Actually, cool. Nicole bought it for me because yeah. I mentioned that I was into it. Slay the Spire is dope, dude.
That's what I keep hearing.
It is a roguelike card game, you know, so if you're like a Magic player or something like that, it'll feel kind of natural to you. It's super fun. I've played a couple of runs. It's got some promise, man. It might not have forever replayability for me, but it's fun. I'm enjoying it. So there's that as well.
Yeah. I'm not a TCG kind of dude.
Well, it's not a trading card game. It's a roguelike. So, you know, you queue up like you would play any other roguelike. You know what I mean? You go in and you build your deck as you play.
Oh, that's right. It's a deck builder.
Right.
And
you get to upgrade cards and stuff, and there's different characters. Right. It's cool. The mode that I've had the most fun with is the daily mode, where they roll a bunch of affixes and stuff, and then you go through that run with a randomized deck. And I completed a whole run yesterday, and by the end of it, the interactions were super fun. Like I was getting all these bonuses for playing certain card types, and then I was just whooping ass with it. Like the whole last stage, I don't think I took any damage for it, which was insane. Like I should have been taking a ton of damage by then, but the way it worked out, I just wasn't. So, yeah. And I checked that discount code for Void Bastards. The coupon I have is only good until the 5th of June. So if you're listening to this early next week, check your inventory, see if you've got it. If you want to grab that game, grab it. Grab it quick.
This episode's not going to be edited by then.
Probably not.
Yeah, that's good. Good to hear. I'll put that in the wish list as well.
What about you, Philip? What's on your radar?
Man, nothing. Nothing is on my radar right now. You know, we have Good Omens coming out in a couple of days of recording. I'm looking to get into that. Mm-hmm. I'm looking to start Chernobyl since everything else in my life has ended. Mm-hmm. But I'm not doing anything. I'm still reading books. I'm in the middle of The Restaurant at the End of the Universe. I've been enjoying that. But mm-hmm. other than that, no. I mean, I play video games with Paul every Sunday, and I look forward to it every fucking week.
I've been having a lot of fun with Sea of Thieves.
So we'll get there a little bit. Well, you know what? Fuck it. No. We're playing Sea of Thieves, and it is so fucking good. So good. So good! And, like, we are on the precipice of apparently the greatest quest in the game. When you have to actually use the constellations in the sky to get to where you're going. And that makes me so fucking hard to think that we're going to be using the stars to get around. I want them to, I know that, well, you know, no, I'm going to save that. I'm going to put that back in my brain. And then other than that, no, that's, I'm not doing anything at all. So I've just been low key trying to work on my show and trying to get everything ready for Dragon Con in a couple months.
Dope, dope, dope.
Indeed.
Let's see. I'm trying to think about like what I've been watching or playing or whatever. Well, I talked about what I've been playing a little bit. Been rewatching Dark because Nicole's watching it with me for the first time. That's been an interesting trip because, you know, she's a native German speaker.
Yeah.
And that show's in German.
I was just about to ask you that.
And, you know, I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying going through it a second time because now I'm seeing, like, some of the architecture of what they set up. And the giveaways, man. The fucking, like, I'm just going to show you the truth that you don't find out for two or three more episodes. Like, holy shit. That's insane, you know, and it's the kind of joy that you can only get from watching a show that's inherently wrapped around a mystery by watching it a second time, because you get to see all of that work that the groundwork that they laid that you were completely ignorant to the first time for obvious reasons, because you were just along for the ride. But
don't you love when that happens?
Oh, it's so crazy.
They just tell you exactly what's going on, but you're too dumb
to figure it out. You're too dumb to know.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So that's been cool. I do want to check out Chernobyl. I've been hearing good things about that. Everybody's really talking about it. Like,
well, as soon as we get off tonight, we're probably going to start at least one episode.
Nice.
Well, I'll hit you up with a yes or no.
Yeah, let me know. I've been hearing a lot of people talking about it, though. Yeah. The Free Folks sub are talking like, yeah, Game of Thrones is over, but HBO's like, here, stick around a little bit longer. So, you know, there's that. We do have something to plug here. Friends of the show, Scott Moore, who's been on the Sunday stream at least once, who volunteers at the podcast track of Dragon Con, helps us out there. Well, not us, but helps Charles out there and helps the track out, is the audio producer and a cast member of the Blood Crow Stories. He has a band called Disciples of Danger that he plays bass in, and they just released their music video, and it's over on YouTube. There'll be a link in the show notes, but if you're just going to search for it, they're a rap core metal band from Atlanta.
Yep.
But yeah, Disciples of Danger, Enough is Enough. The video is super high production value for, you know, a local, quote unquote, local band for Atlanta like that. Like they put a lot of work into it, and it's pretty neat. So go check that out. They're good friends of the show. So showing them some love will be much appreciated by us.
They fucking shot this thing in widescreen.
Yep.
And everything. Yeah, it's super high value, mm-hmm. high production.
But yeah. Oh, okay. I have one last story before we get out of here, before we do our outros. I meant to talk about this. I completely forgot about it. So do you, Phil, do you remember Artifact? Valve's.
The card game.
Yeah, the dead game.
No. I heard it. Everything came out. Everyone was happy, and people are still playing it to today. Yeah. Why?
Yeah. Well, it has.
Is this like actual Artifact now?
It has less than like 100 concurrent players at any given time, but yeah, it's the dead game. What's interesting is Twitch's Artifact category has blown up recently. And had over 10,000 viewers in the past week because it has become a wasteland of porn, memes, pirated films and TV shows, and everything else in between. Yep, the internet has hijacked Artifact, the entry in Twitch, and are showing all kinds of stuff.
What?
Yes. This has been a thing.
What? How long has this been going on?
I think it's been going on for about a week or so.
Why is nobody doing anything about it?
Well, I'm sure they're shutting it down as they bump into stuff, but yeah, dude, it's pretty wild.
Oh god, I'm trying to pull it up right now.
Oh no. The New Zealand mosque shooting was broadcast on one of the channels.
Oh.
This is terrible. Yeah, so yeah, by all means, if you're adventurous, check it out if it's still going on. But yeah, maybe not. Maybe be careful about that kind of stuff. I do not suggest watching something like that. But yeah, it's... despite the effort to shut it down, porn at this moment is still popping up in the category. Oh man, I love it. I love it when the internet, when the wild west of the internet just rears its ugly head.
I'm in here now, and I don't know. It looks like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There's only 8 people streaming the game.
Oh, they must have shut it down then.
Yeah.
They probably got somebody watching it like a hawk now.
Yeah. Yeah. Normally, when these stories come out, it's too late, you know?
Yep.
Oh, but my God.
the second highest streamer with 40 viewers, his stream is labeled unbanned.
Yeah.
Oh no, this is a jacked stream.
How
it's
so?
A guy pretending to be Dr. Disrespect. What the and he's watching like gay porn or something.
What in
the? I have, dude. He's playing Artifact, but he's doing a whole bunch of other stuff too. Oh wow! I don't know, dude. Maybe the internet is still alive. In any case, yeah, I thought that was a fun little thing to bring. With that being said, you can find me on Twitch and Twitter at SoapboxGSTU. Of course, every Sunday night over at GSTU Media with Philip and Dennis and lately Shannon. Shanda Panda has been filling in for Kurt and just, you know, cutting her teeth on streaming. Playing Sea of Thieves, super fun. We're really digging it. We've gotten really good at killing sharks.
We are the Shark Slayers.
Yo, dude, megalodons need to just fuck right off. I would love to get caught by a kraken again sometime soon because I want to kill it.
Well, we'll talk off stream, but I know how to summon one.
Oh,
yeah.
Is it to start fighting a shark and also see a player ship nearby? Because that seems to work every time.
Yeah, come on, no. I mean, it's on a 3-hour timer and you have to take out the skeleton fort and the boat raid, and then it was
gotcha. But yeah, so that's crazy. How about you, Philip?
Well, you know what, last night botched D&D podcast recorded probably the best piece of content that they ever did. And it was called Space Vikings, which was a serial cartoon episode of Space Vikings. And the only place you can get that is over at patreon.com/botchpodcast. Question mark? I don't know. We might put it out to the actual the fan base because it was that good. So keep an ear to the ground on that. You can follow me at all social media at Imaginary Nomad. You can follow me on Twitch there as well. And like Paul said, GSTU Media on Twitch every Sunday night at 8 p.m. playing with my slobbins.
Slobbins.
Well, I think we're going to call it. We lost two players along the way, but, you know, I feel like the show got a little bit more better, less sad, and whatnot. So thanks for making it to the end of our episode, and we will see you next week.